July 2011 meeting of the Vermont Writers Advisory Council's order. And just a note, I know many of all of you received the email about the special delivery that Penny is expecting, and we would hope to present her with a gift tonight. But she is home on bed rest for a few days. So we'll have to celebrate next for a new squire and another point this year. So there is a card going around, and if you can sign it, we'll be sending that on to her, or maybe waiting until she comes for a visit. First order of business is public comment. Are there anyone here for public comment?
We have one person signed up, Kenny Bay. If you want to just have a seat right there where it says public comment, and we'll...
I'll just say, you have 2 minutes for the presentation. So.
Well, I want to say thank you, everyone, for allowing me to express myself within these 2 minutes. My name is Kenny Bay. I am a newly resident of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area from Michigan. And I'm delighted to be here. And my comments to you tonight is about who you support a world enough to create. As a 15-year experienced veteran teacher, assistant principal, I frequently use the Metro to tutor students in the Anacostia area. I've noticed on several occasions when I commute, many of the students display disorderly behavior, unruly behavior, which you probably are familiar with at some point in time. It's definitely been a problem sometimes that I hear in my research, but I'm here to offer a solution. As I noted, my experience in education working with high-risk students and discipline as well. I consider this is a great opportunity to engage students. This is something that we cannot police, suspend, or give them tickets, but if we can engage the public schools, our charter schools, bring the conversations to the students, get community buy-ins from leaders, stakeholders, parents, more importantly, the students, I believe we can have a winning chance to turn things around. As I indicated in the outset of my speech, people support a world they help create. As we see it so often with their campaign pledges, with ribbons and wristbands to no text and drive, why not create some type of slogan or campaign here with the Metro and public schools where students can identify good quality behavior and pledge to this. Also have ambassadors that can do the training, not serve as police officers, but as greeters. And they can use this as time that they can use for to community service and they can work off. And it's just an opportunity that I'm willing to serve instead of being those ones that watch the news, complain, point the finger, what so-and-so is not doing. I'm here to serve and offer my service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take that under advisement then. If you want to leave your contact information,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Carol, do you have a question?
Frank DiBernardo.
I just want to say that I guess at the outset of the new Metro kind of public contact campaign, I happened to meet Mr. Bay talking to Michael Taborn in the Fortown Metro. And I think we all are in agreement that something needs to be done in the concert with, cooperation with school system, Metropolitan Police Department, and Metro Transit Police. So this is something that we definitely want, I think it's worth pursuing. Thank you very much.
I might mention that, if you remember, a few months ago, Joseph and Victoria were working on a public safety forum with Metro Transit Police. And the last offer from them, the last communication from them, was to possibly have it as a back-to-school idea. So I'll mention that a little later in the meeting.
you so much. If you have my contact, Thank you very much for coming today. The next item is the approval of agenda. If there are no changes, we'll accept it as approved. Seeing none, it's approved. And then we move to past meeting minutes. Any corrections or additions to the past meeting minutes?
We've, as you know, launched Metro Forward as an effort to communicate with customers about the $5 billion capital program. Metro Forward, you know, put us back on Facebook. We want to use those communication channels to tell the story of what we're doing. You know, one of the things we often hear from customers is that they know in very high-level terms that we're making investments, but they don't understand necessarily the benefits for them. You know, they see the plywood panels and they see the around escalators and they see the yellow signs, sort of ubiquitous utilitarian yellow signs that say, you know, we're working to serve you better, and it has a date. But it doesn't tell you the story of what's going on behind those walls. And that's what Metro Forward is intended to do. It's not, you know, we want folks to know this escalator's not broken and it hasn't been out of service for weeks and weeks because we haven't gotten around to fixing it. It's actually out of service because we're rebuilding it. We've stripped it down to the foundation. We're constructing a new one in its place, and that takes some time. So we hope that, you know, by getting the story out that way, that we will, you know, at least bias some understanding on the part of customers as we move forward with the rebuilding effort. And the third part of it is a customer communications component, and that specifically relates to bus. And this will be something that will come back with your indulgence and present more formally, you know, with a PowerPoint and go through it in some detail and get your input. But, you know, one of the things that occurs to me that is missing here is real-time information, alert information for bus customers. We have it now for rail. We've had it for some time. You know, the system works okay. I'm getting messages out to customers about rail disruptions. And you can receive those alerts, as you know, on your cell phone or on your desktop email for that, through a system called eAlert, which is actually the name of the vendor. But we don't offer anything similar for bus customers. We have NextBus, and that's an option, but it's different from telling people to be, that's a response driven. You have to make the query, right, and get the information. There's nothing to push that information out to customers proactively to say, hey, you know, there's a parade downtown today, or there's a big fire, or something like that that's going to affect your trip. So one of the things that we want to build over the summer technologically is an alert system for bus customers, where bus customers can sign up for specific routes, their route, multiple routes, what have you, and have us get that information to them whenever there's an incident that could affect their trip. Many other transit agencies already have it. It strikes me that this is a need that we have. And so that function is the customer communication, the third piece of what rolls up under me, and that'll be staffed, at least initially, on weekdays for some periods, early in the morning to late in the evening, when it'll certainly cover the rush hours and the midday. And that office, those folks who will be embedded in the control center, just as the rail alerts people are today, so they'll have, you know, direct access to what the controllers are seeing, what the dispatchers are seeing, and be able to get those alerts out to customers. In addition to that, those folks will take on the responsibility for the long-range communication, the advisories to bus customers about detours and weekend bus service impacts as well. We mentioned advisories, and that's another area that I think needs some focus here, and something that also, as we look at the alert system, that I want to take the opportunity to address. The way that communications here with customers, you know, we sort of have two tools in our arsenal, and they are alerts for rail customers today, and we have press releases. Those are the two mechanisms for us to push information out for customers. Press releases are kind of clunky when you're thinking about talking to customers. It's not in customer language. It's written for the press. It's written like It's a certain format, and it's not as user-friendly as I would like to be when communicating with customers. And many customers don't even sign up for press releases because why would you? You're not a member of the press. You want customer information. Our alert system is 140 characters. It's designed that way to have those alerts be able to appear on your mobile device. And so the piece that strikes me as missing is what other transit agencies and I would call advisories. We have alerts, what we need are advisories. And advisories are longer form messages that would not be delivered to your cell phone, but when you sign up, you'd give a second email address, and that would be your desktop email. And that would be the place where we could send you a couple paragraphs about why something's happened. Why is the escalator out of service at Bobby Hop today? Why was it this morning? Take the time to actually give the why behind what's happening, what customers can expect. It's also a place for us to communicate bus detours. Today we do that as a press release. And you know, if you don't know to sign up for press releases, or you don't read a newspaper that happens to publish that, there aren't many. We don't have a way to get that to you directly, unless you go looking for it on our website. So this is about, you know, giving ourselves the tools to push information out to customers in a form that they can use, that's clear, that's in, you know, the, in a friendly format for customers to use. There are other enhancements on the rail side, I'm just sticking with alerts for a moment, that I think would be beneficial. You know, if just by show of hands, if you would, how many people are signed up for rail alerts on any line? Okay. So that's most of you. Rail alerts could be worded a little bit better, I think. The system was designed to make it simple and quick at a time when simple and quick was the technological need. You know, they didn't want to burden folks in the control center with another function when they were operating trains or dispatching trains rather. And making announcements and updating the kids and all of that. But this, the whole way that we put alerts up and take alerts down, the phrase disruption cleared, we see a lot. And oftentimes, we don't know what we're referring to. We could have three disruptions going at a time on a particular line. Which disruption are we clearing? We're clearing the train malfunction in New York Avenue, or are we clearing the escalator malfunction or escalator mechanical problem in DuPont Circle? They're both red line alerts. So that's something that I think packaged together over the near term, over the next couple months, that we can tackle and make a difference. You mentioned, just going back to social media, we mentioned the launch of Metro Forward. Once we have the manager of social media position filled, that information will become more rich. We basically want to send staff out with cameras and video recorders to tell our story and keep it interesting and fresh so that customers can learn about the projects that we're undertaking. And to also have an opportunity to comment on it. We are welcoming comments on Facebook. Obviously, the conversation is happening now on Twitter, and we're engaged in that. So all of that information is helpful. You know, I don't shy away from feedback from customers. We've heard a lot in recent days with the heat wave about hot cars, and there are some really passionate IT professionals, I would call them, also transit advocates. I'm talking about a person on Twitter named Fix Wamata, who has created a database online on his own time, which amazes me, to track hot cars. And anytime somebody reports a hot car on Twitter, if you're on a car and it's not pleasantly hot, you have a couple options. You can certainly use the intercom to notify the train operator, but many people these days just put that out on Twitter. And that all gets tracked. And I view that as very, very helpful for the efforts of tracking that, because because at the end of the day, what I do is take every car car that's been reported and share it with CARMI, and so that during the overnight hours, time and parts permitting, they're able to go and investigate those. And it's one way that we are trying to stay on top of that issue, and that's just one example. Of course, all of this is part of a broader strategy. The general manager, Mr. Sarles, has made engaging with customers, communicating better, a priority for this authority. So this is one slice of a much bigger pie that includes, as someone mentioned earlier, the meet and greets with the chief of police and with the general manager, getting out there. Engaging customers through research. We've just got done with research around station names. We did extensive research, and that's really ongoing through the multiple phases on the new rail cars. And those are around the map is a third example. It's all part of getting everyone to get some skin in the game, to feel like they have a piece of Metro, that they should feel invested, that they should feel that we're responsive and responsible to them. That's really what it's all about for us. So that's the extent of what I had prepared to say. As I said, we welcome any questions if you have them, and I'd be happy to take whatever time.
Thank you very much, Dan. We appreciate that. Since there are so many questions, we'll go around. Patrick, you have a question?
One of the routes that I ride some of the time in Montgomery County is the C2, the C4. Language might be an issue on that. Is it designed to go out in English only, or is Spanish being considered?
At this point, with two positions, I'm imagining that it might be limited to English only. We can certainly, as part of the hiring process, which we have not embarked on just yet, make Spanish preferred something that we look for when we're looking for candidates. The other way to address that, though, is as part of the design of the system, the advisory could direct you back to a page on the website itself. So you would get a message that says, Metro has issued an advisory for one of your trips. Please click this link to find out more. And when you click that link, then you would have all the translation options available to you that we provide, not just Spanish, but Korean and all the other Vietnamese that live in other languages.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for this presentation. It's great to actually see all the various different creative ways of getting information out there. And I just have a comment that it's just like as we get more information, the possibility is for more aggravation. And I first moved here in 1993, and there was no, when you go on a train, you had no idea when the next train was coming. It was thinking about it, it's actually kind of refreshing because, like, when you go down at 7 o'clock, you don't see it's 12 minutes for your next train. You just go down there and wait for a train. Train would come, and as long as there's good performance, if the trains regularly come, there's no longer delays. I was not in a hot car until about 5 years ago, so I didn't think there would be a need to track them. That communication is great, it's not necessarily a substitute for better, more reliable performance. And sort of the time we didn't have that communication, we could just sort of accept things, but trains ran smoother, there were no hot cars, there were escalators were far more efficient and actually working on the system. So the greater communication can actually sort of expose even more problems that are going to be much more difficult to address.
I do live that every day. I do think you have to be to have the conversation. I mean, and let me just say this. I hear from time to time since I've been here, people who just caution about having communication, as you said, be a substitute for addressing the underlying problems. I have to say, you know, I wouldn't have accepted the position. I wouldn't be out here today if this were happening in the right order. So in other words, the capital improvement program, the $5 billion, all of that support, all that groundwork, Metro Forward, all was in place before I got here. So communication in this case is actually, you know, the trailing end of the effort. And I think it's an important one because the rebuilding of Metro, you know, we're 35, going on 36 years old. You know, you mentioned escalators, you know, operating under our types of conditions have a useful life of about 20 or 25 years. We've exposed them to the elements for a long period of time. There hasn't been a preventative maintenance that we would have liked. So they're all experiencing these issues at the same time. I think we need to explain the why of why all these escalators are having issues and why they're all having them now, and also manage expectations that this is going to be a relatively long rebuilding process. It's going to take, you know, it's not going to be done in a couple of months. It's going to be done in a couple of years, and or a matter of years. And by communicating, we explain to customers that you know, we hear you and that we are moving in the right direction. Here's the progress we've made incrementally thus far. Here's what's left to be done, and give folks the confidence to know that we're on it. But thank you very much for your comments.
Chris.
Hi, thanks for coming. Sort of in the same vein, I'd like to suggest that all this communication stuff, I think, is really window dressing, unless you actually improve the performance, whether for the system as a whole, or even just the communication function. Long before your arrival, there must have been six different efforts to get Metro to communicate better, and there still isn't a culture to communicate quickly, efficiently, accurately, or even want to communicate if you're down in the station. This is a problem. Station managers are often of no help. Alerts lag behind events. As you said, they're confusing. So I would suggest that there needs to be, first of all, an effort to really communicate so that it does those things. Because it all breaks down when there's a 12-minute headway on the red line in the morning. And it just doesn't matter what you say. And in fact, I think you set up a dissonance when you have these rosy communications, and then the performance doesn't match it. Secondly, sort of in the same vein, I would really encourage you to have people start treating the riders more like adults when they communicate. And by that I mean, tell us what the problem is. An incident doesn't cover it. We're all schooled enough in the problems to know that a door problem means one thing, a train out of service means another, a would-be bomb issue means another still. So you actually communicate much more useful information if you're actually saying what it is.
I absolutely subscribe to that. In fact, last Thursday, which was a very bad morning operationally for us, the two separate issues, two separate lines, we had the buggy, which is a low-profile trailer, basically, that's used to haul a rail around the system. During the overnight, that derailed one brief wheel at Fort Totten, and then we had the switch maintenance that ran along. They ran into some problems getting the parts to line up off the switch out at New York Avenue, or right by the yard between New York Avenue and Rhode Island Avenue. And we issued an explanation to customers after that and an apology to customers after that. There were people who've been following this stuff for a long time that said that we've never seen anything like this before. And we want to do more of that, you know, after action. If we have a bad morning and there's service disruption, I want to be able to go back to customers and to say, here's what happened, here's why, here's what we're doing about it. Not just, you know, let time pass. And I think we've got buy-in for that. I think an alert system, go back to, you know, my presentation, will be helpful for that, because then I'll be able to get those apologies, those explanations into the hands of customers in a direct way. It's still posted on the website if you want to go back and take a read of it if you haven't seen it. But I do agree that, you know, giving customers information, not calling things situations or incidents, it is helpful. It helps them understand. It helps them, by giving them the information, it basically diffuses the situation and overall, you know, improves their perception of Metro.
We calibrate our behavior by it.
Joseph, did you want?
Sorry.
Did you have a question? Or
no,
you were like it.
I actually did read the apology you mentioned. It was almost too detailed, but I got to stay away from that. It was way more information on the situation than I expected. I just had a comment about the news or the press releases. I do actually read those every weekend or look at the page to see the list from the past month. And I would just ask the titles have a little more detail. They'll just say something like bus detours this weekend. Mm-hmm. And when I'm looking at the list from like the previous month or something, that's not very helpful. Or it'll say something happened today. But there's no date listed. So.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, I do take the time each weekend to read them. And if there was another way to access that, that would be great.
And you're excited to receive them as emails as well? Okay, you can do that. Anyone can do that. You can subscribe to receive notification of the press releases on your email, similar to the alert system. So you might want to do that if you're interested. One of the things I've been working on with the web team is making some some very easy improvements to the website. And if you've gone to our homepage recently, you've probably seen it looks a little bit different. We've changed the layout slightly, given us a little bit more space for graphics, and added a forward to it. But we're working to rationalize some things that are I think non-controversial. Like for example, under About Metro, you've got news and you've also got media relations. Why? They're similar enough that they should be combined into one section. And make it even easier to find stuff. Adding the date to press releases on the menu is a very simple solution. It's all database driven, so I think we can get that done for you. Get it done for us in short order.
Karen,
I want to thank you for your presentation. It's sort of refreshing to see you haven't yet been PowerPointed. I have a couple of comments. First of all, I signed up for the Rail Alerts, and there were so many, it was really frightening. And so I'm thinking that if you look at that system, it might be worthwhile doing some kind of threshold work if the delay is going to be more than 10 minutes or something like that, because that's too much information. My second comment is that I applaud the direction, and I already see a sharper focus in the communications. There's definitely been a change, and I understand what Chris is saying, that there's no substitute for improvements in performance. My concern is for the people who do not have email. Yeah, I'm all worried. I have a smartphone, I have a laptop, I work from home, I can sit and read and contact Metro at my leisure. But what about people who are riding the system who don't have access to this information? That's where I think in-train and in-bus communications need to be a heck of a lot better. And as I said, with Mr. Bay, it was really refreshing on the day that Metro sort of started this communications campaign online to see real live human beings there giving out brochures and things like that. And I know that that's, an intense cost, but again, I think you've got to think about the population who does not have access to smartphones, iPads, and computers.
Excellent comment. Always in the back of my mind. And it was heartened. It's something that I will continue to have in the back of my mind as we move forward with this. I was heartened today, having gone out, and I think you have on the agenda. You have a 7,000 series rail car presentation later on. But I was out at New Carrollton today, and it was really heartening to see that the digital screens on board the rail cars will have the ability to communicate not just the basic information of what station is next or what line you're on, but could have customer service information. Here's what the weekend track work is, and that sort of thing. So that's what those are for, and we need more initiatives like that, and we can't lose sight of the fact that people need, in some cases, paper ones in English and in Spanish. That's we we serve many populations, and some are more wired than others.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. I too moved here in 1993. I remember just how much things have changed over the past couple decades, where you would come to a station, you would wait, you would, the IDs didn't exist, and even the train operators had different ways of communicating with their passengers. Sometimes you'd be on a train waiting for minutes at a time, much longer at times, and you really wouldn't know when the train would be moving again. I find it refreshing that some operators will provide as much information as possible. It's not always consistent, though, and I think that would be something that could benefit passengers if there was a more clear, concise, and consistent way of receiving those messages. It seems to have gone better over the last several years, though, so I'm encouraged by that. Also, I think it was interesting to hear you talk about Twitter's being used to find out about these hot cars. And I'm curious, the information you collect, I think the public might generally understand, the folks that are on Twitter, that it's being received by Metro, but I think it would be more interesting to know what they're doing with that information, so that it's more of a feedback loop saying, we have the information, and here's what we're doing to these cars that are, you know, excessively worn. They're being fixed, or it's going to take days, weeks, whatever. I'm on the trains in the morning, I'm looking at my Twitter feed, I see the Pixel Modas and a couple others who are retweeting messages from passengers, and sometimes I see, you know, their initials at the end of a Metro response, but often these things go unaddressed, and I'm just wondering if there's a better way. I know you can't communicate with everyone on Twitter and Facebook, etc., but if there's a way to communicate in a general sense for some of these problems that might be repeated throughout the passengers.
Sure. Yeah, just as you say that, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for us to say thank you for all of your high power reports today, and we've received them all, and just do a catch-all. That's not a bad suggestion at all. I will tell you that in terms of the follow-up that that Rail does, it does vary depending on each report as it relates to hot cars. In some cases, the problem, you know, may require parts that needs to be ordered while they try to have parts on hand. Sometimes that does take the car out of service. In other cases, they can simply reset the system, so that's a pretty quick thing. And in other cases, customers are reporting hot cars that aren't really hot cars. They're hot customers getting on cars, and you know, if you're on a train, and the design of rail car HVAC units, it's cooling specifically, it's designed to, you know, knock down the ambient temperature by about 15 degrees. If you get a really hot day, you know, 95 degrees, you know, it's going to knock it down into the high 70s. It's not going to be cool like we all would want it to be in our homes, necessarily. And then you further, the other dynamic of this is, you know, you then are moving through hot tunnels, opening the doors at stations basically every 2 minutes, and every hit all the doors open on one side, now lets the hot air out, or the cold air out, lets hotter air in. So keeping rail cars cool is a challenge. There are some problem cars out there, and we want to know about those. The other thing, I mentioned, you know, using the intercom on hot cars. And the reason I say that is because that is the fastest way to affect a response. Twitter, we monitor now, and we'll get even better at monitoring it, and we're, you know, certainly following up at the end of the day. But if you notify the operator of the train, they can call the Operations Control Center. And we have, through the summer months, been positioning car maintenance posts strategically around the system to respond to mechanical issues, one of which could be, you know, addressing an AC issue. So oftentimes, you know, we've successfully dealt with a number of hot cars that way by having personnel meet the train, and either, in some cases, they're able to reset it, you know, just needed the breaker reset. In other cases, they have to take the car out of service, but at least it's an immediate response as opposed to something that happens at the end of the day.
Just one quick follow-up. I just want to ask, That incident happened to me a couple weeks ago, where someone on the Metro platform, an employee, came on and said, it was a hot car. She walked in and said, why didn't anyone tell the train operator? She went up and communicated with him. I think a lot of people don't realize that they can do that. I think they think those are for emergencies only, and that might be something that if Metro can communicate better to the riders, that they are able to use those to communicate, I think it might happen more often. So.
Yeah. Signs on.
I have the issue related to the people who are hearing impaired, always the issue. But have you found a solution how to let them know, the writer know who are hearing impaired? For example, you have electronic message board, it doesn't speak the same time as a vocal PA.
Right.
So how they are working on. Also, number two, have you thought about having, I don't know if you have learned it before, have you thought about having integrated emotional preparedness, including communicating this stuff. And you thought about having a particular time and day to have emotional preparedness for the people who are hearing impaired.
Not a topic that has come up in my tenure here thus far. I can certainly follow up on it. The PIDs, the in-station electronic displays, is something that resides within the Rail Operations Control Center. They're the folks who are responsible for it. And as you folks probably know better than I do, you know, the history of those when they were installed was sort of a big event in the history of Metro. But the technology has probably evolved, and there may be an opportunity to further enhance it, to be in line with modern day integrated text-to-speech systems, where what gets announced over the PA is identical to what appears on the PID screen. There are airports that do this all the time. On a daily basis, there are other transit properties that are starting to roll this out. I come from one of them, NJ Transit, and many of their bigger stations uses a text-to-speech type of system, so that when a train gets announced, whatever is being announced audibly is also being displayed visually on all the screens on the platform.
Thanks for your presentation. I have a few questions and suggestions for those of us that ride the bus, and most of this conversation has centered around folks that ride the rail and how Metro communicates with the rail. And so often the bus is forgotten about. I think it's really tiring, because if you think the rail passengers have an issue with communication, it's 10 times worse for those of us that ride the bus primarily. So I guess one of the first questions I have for you is, have you considered, and maybe Mont has it and I don't know it just yet, a separate Twitter account that just talks about bus diesel and bus changes that are upcoming. The other question I have for you is, I guess, do you work with the local transit agencies like DOT so that when there's a Great Streets project going on, like the Pennsylvania Avenue Great Streets project, and DOT is closing down a major intersection this weekend, and there was a question on the neighborhood listserv that says, well, what happens to the 36 bus? And it was kind of like DOT was pulling back to WMATA, WMATA was pulling back to DOT. So it would be interesting, and I think it would be really useful if WMATA, if they know about these major construction projects in Silver Spring or wherever else, if they get the information out to those neighborhood groups, maybe via libraries, or I don't know, but whatever the means are, to just let people know this route change is going to happen in your neighborhood. The other thing I'd really like to see WMATA do is I'd like to see, for those of us that ride the bus, some type of a generic detour sticker or a sign. And again, I go back to D.C. because I live in D.C. and this is what we do. But anytime there's an emergency parking sticker for maybe a moving van that needs to be at that location from 9 to 12, DI has the standard red and white square paper stickers that they stick up all over, and you know, okay, then I can't park here. It would be great if WMATA could just slap something like that on a Metro bus stop and say, oh, there's a detour here, I need to go find another bus stop. It doesn't have to be anything simple, just something easily recognizable so folks know there's a detour. My bus is probably not going to come today. The other thing I'd like to see DOT use is I'd like to see WMATA use the audio systems on the bus more to say, not just, you know, if you see a senior stand up, if you have a bag that looks suspicious, but to say, you know, this bus isn't going to run tomorrow because it's a holiday or something. The other thing I'd really like Fort Minor to do is to use the operators on the bus. The operators know their regular riders. They can tell them, you know, we're not going to be here tomorrow, or hey, there's construction going on, you're going to have to, there's a parade, you're going to have to catch us around the block. And there are so many easy ways for me, it seems, for Fort Minor to communicate that it sometimes doesn't click, that it does feel like the Chris said earlier, like Fort Minor doesn't want to communicate with people, because these people, I mean, we can talk about the skins winning, but if you can't tell me that my bus isn't going to be here tomorrow because there's a detour. So we have communications differently on the bus, and I just like to see WMATA prioritize how bus people take the bus instead of just thinking you communicate to us like you communicate to us on the road.
Thank you. I'm just not sure. Did you catch the beginning part of what I was talking about around bus alerts?
No,
I think. Okay, so I think you'd be really, really pleased with that piece. And just to some, not to burden everyone else with this, and I'd be happy to have an offline conversation with you. We have rail alerts today. One of the things that is top of my list, and I've got three positions to staff it and to manage it, will be bus alerts. And so basically, you'll be able to sign up for alerts for your specific bus route. We will notify you not only when there's a detour for a parade or something planned, but also if there's something that's unplanned, like a fire or you know, some other unforeseen disruption that will cause your bus to be late. So it's more push as opposed to, you know, query. Next bus is fine for, you know, routine stuff, but you know, we want to get the word out to folks proactively when there's stuff like that happens. So I think you'd be really pleased with that as a first step. Also, you know, we want to be able to deliver detour information into your inbox, not just on your cell phone, but as a longer form advisor email. All the stuff that you mentioned about the traditional, very simple things that could be done to communicate with us customers, you know, signs on bus stops and so forth, don't directly, you know, fall within within my jurisdiction, but I can certainly follow up on for you.
All right, I'll probably have a bit of a laundry list similar to Kelsey's, although as we tend to, it's, you know, complimentary suggestions. And she just made me think about three more bullet points that she was talking about. I appreciate having been part of this group for some time. And I'll just qualify, I live in D.C., I ride both bus and rail, and I don't own a car, is that, you know, when we talk about things like signs or putting in more PID signs and putting in PID signs for the bus, we get, you know, there's a lot of cost associated with that. And trying to think about doing more with less and what can be done with the resources we have, there's an existing IT department staff, so things like Twitter accounts and being better with some of the press releases, the cost profile is a bit different. It's been easier to sort of push things around. But I think when you think about what some of the existing assets that you have that you could use to improve communication, to me, one of the assets you have is a lot of staff in the field. And thinking kind of how can you, and I realize there are union rules issues with bus drivers, train drivers, the folks in the stations, but within the bounds of the existing constraints, you know, what can be done to kind of pull those folks into communicating better with customers, getting them information in a timely manner that they can pass on. And I think this is particularly, like we just had the second anniversary of the Red Line accident. And one of the issues that arose in that accident and then some things that happened in the weeks after that was that, you know, you had thousands and thousands of people in rail stations who had no idea what was going on. In some cases, like this, the staff in the stations didn't know what was going on. They found out what was going on from hearing from some customer who had a smartphone or had gotten a phone call from a friend. And, you know, it was just apparently chaos. I wasn't in a rail station that day, and I think I should probably thank God I wasn't. But, you know, how can you start to use the staff that you have as well as, you know, IT resources, particularly in situations where you really need to start moving a lot of people fast. And I mean, there are training issues there, there's a lot of issues there, but I think just thinking about that resource, also thinking about coordinating with the jurisdictions in some cases and trying to use, again, that kind of human resource and communicating the communication not just directly with the customers, but finding sort of secondary ways to push the information out to the customers so that other people have the good information to pass on. And that's sort of sorting through the information and getting to the good information that you want passed on that's useful, train derailment versus service disruption, or stuck doors versus service disruption. What's going to be useful to people? What can people actually, use to make decisions about how they're going to get around or change their schedule? With regard to sort of the sign issue, some of us had some discussions with DDOT and WMATA about this, and I did actually see when there was some rerouting on the D6 line, there were some signs posted for a while. They had, it's on my old phone because it was a couple months ago before I got the, it's about 6 months ago before I got this phone. There must have been 50 words of text on the sign. It started out, this bus stop is being temporarily abolished, and then continued on for about 40 more words. And I appreciate the effort, I think everyone did, but kind of like as a next generation, sort of bringing some of that down to just a few very simple words like bus detour or something, because when you kind of slim down the verbiage a little bit, it also makes it easier for someone who is limited English proficient, who's a native Korean speaker or an Arabic speaker, to kind of figure out what the sign is actually trying to communicate. And I know sometimes DDOT uses these signs where it's like boilerplate language, and then you can kind of erase dates or times, and then they can write something in the marker. So then you're not having to like recreate a new sign every time you have something come up. I mean, that's just would be another suggestion. And then the last thing I would just say is, I think that for the bus riding contingent here, if you could at some point, whether it's on the clock or off the clock, just spend some time on our buses and see what, just get a sense of what goes on in the bus and how crowded some of the lines can get. Just get a sense of what goes on in sort of the bus culture, because there is so much focus here on the rail system. And I know a lot of the managers here at headquarters ride the rail system regularly, but sometimes I just get the impression maybe the involvement, direct involvement and experience on the bus isn't quite as much. And so those would be just my thoughts.
I will tell you that the folks who will be reporting to me handling bus alerts and bus communications on the customer side have to spend their first month riding buses. So that's one. Two, as it relates to getting the word out to folks in a timely manner, I think we have all the tools we need to do that. And those tools are some created by us, alert systems and so forth, that will be getting better. But also, Twitter has grown exponentially. Many people have it these days. It's no substitute for any of the other more traditional tools, but it's helpful. And I think, even just in the last 2 years, we've seen that technology evolve. So I don't think our issue is so much around having the tools to get it out. It's having the best information for us to broadcast to customers. And so what I think, you guys will probably be helpful in this. What I think folks need to understand is that when something happens, whether it's a train with a door malfunction or anything else, there's always a period of time that has to elapse to allow dispatchers and the operator of the train to figure out exactly what's going on. And during that time, unfortunately, customers are on trains and they may be holding and be experiencing a delay. But it's important that we understand the severity of the situation before we communicate initially with customers. Is this going to be a 5-minute delay? Is it going to be something where we're single tracking through the rush hour? So until we get a clear understanding that there is a reasonable desire to hold back ever so slightly before we get that initial message out. That said, there's always ways to streamline that process so that we're getting the message out as quickly as possible. That's the goal. But we want the information to be accurate and useful and actionable. We want customers to be able to take that information and to make informed judgments on whether or not they need to switch from bus to rail or rail to bus or to take the green line instead of the red line. or none of the above, as the case was Thursday. You know, those sorts of things. So, absolutely hear you, though. I agree. You know, the bus here as it relates to customer communications, as evidenced by the fact that we only issue alerts for bus, for rail rather, we don't issue them today for bus customers, but we will this year, for sure.
I do want to thank you. I'm going to try to be as brief as possible. I do primarily ride the bus, and I do have a lot of issues, you know, with real-time communication, not just for the bus, but the rail as well. An emergency situation, I really just think that you need to partner with other transportation agencies, because if there's a serious, you know, emergency, people, and this has happened several times, people can't get home. Simply listing, you know, various bus lines or taxi cabs or something that people can use if their, you know, the their connecting bus is not going to be there after this particular emergency. I also think that, you know, for individuals, I'm computer literate. I have my bus, you know, stop here, you know, on my phone, but there are people that don't. And I think you need to do like what they do on the highway, have a dedicated maybe radio station or something that people can call. You know, this is, you can call 1600 if there's an emergency. And anything that's going on in the transit system, everybody either has a phone or iPod, and usually the iPods or whatever have, you know, radio stations. But I think having a dedicated communication company associated with Metro, I think that that would solve a tremendous, you know, number of problems. And make sure that the bus drivers, you know, are informed of these emergencies, because sometimes, you know, like they said, they're going to close down the 36. That happened to be my pet peeve, my bus. But I got a message saying that the bus stop is going to be closed, or street is going to be closed, but they don't tell you what the alternative is. Yeah. Am I going to be able to get on at a certain stop? So I think that they need to lead you to a map on, you know, WMATA's website saying, okay, these are the stops that are not going to be open. And if you have that on my radio station, I think that that would help the riders. And my last thing is, I know the customer service department now closes at 8:30, but I do think that there needs to be people on call in emergencies, so that if, you know, if anything happened and it's going to be over an hour or whatever time frame you want to give it, they need to come back to work. They need to work until that particular situation is resolved. So hopefully going forward, some of these things will be addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I just said you brought up two things that I just wanted to emphasize. You know, first, when we're in emergency mode here, there isn't there never will be, and never at any transit agency is there the ability to give everyone a sheet of paper that says, here's your best route home. Which is why your suggestion is such a great one, and that is, you know, to remind everyone that you need to have a plan in advance. What's your alternate plan? If your bus ride is disrupted, how are you going to get home? And that's good stuff to have. I mean, I come from the New York area. You know, we had efforts in this regard all keyed off of a couple of incidents. 9/11 was one, but there were two major blackouts in the last 10 years in New York City where train service out of Penn Station was totally shut down. And actually, you know, people who take NJ Transit know that that happens actually from time to time with some frequency. So it's important for folks to know what their alternate options are, right? Can you take the bus? What bus route? I've never ridden the bus before. Right. Where do I go? How do I board it? How much is it? Can I take a ferry in New York? They have ferries. So I think it's important that we communicate that to customers and remind them of the importance of having a plan in advance. And that is my takeaway from that. So that when emergencies do arise, people aren't looking for that kind of information, they have it ready to go. The other thing is, as it relates to, you know, alerts and real-time information, you don't need to have an email address or a computer necessarily to sign up for alerts. So you need it to sign up. You don't need it to receive them. And so your points are all well taken, that smartphones are not in everyone's hands yet. Some people can't afford them. Many people can't afford them. Many people don't have internet access, but many people don't have a computer. But basically everyone has a cell phone and in this day and age, and most people have text messaging. That's what the research shows. You know, we have stats on that. So you can you know, we can give folks the tools to sign up for these the improved alert systems by SMS text messaging, and at least be able to get the heads up that something's going on, and then they would know to call. Thank you for your comments.
Okay, last but not least, my question is, are the drivers supposed to help you find a seat? Because I have a lot of problems. I have my cane, but I have trouble getting a seat, and everybody looks at you like, okay, and the other is, what about the motorcades? You know, I was going to an appointment, and I was late in half an hour because of the motorcade. I knew nothing about the motorcade, you know, that was coming, you know, through my area. And, you know, the phone or whatever they have on the side, I have said this for the last maybe 5 to 6 years, how come they don't notify, let's say there is going to be a detour and they know it in advance. Maybe the motorcade they don't know in advance. Why can't it go up on that screen?
Behind the driver?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the reason is for that. Apparently it hasn't been a question that I've been asked before, but I can absolutely look into it for you. The issue with motorcades, you know, this goes back to how technologically connected are you? Do you have a cell phone? Yes, cell phone.
But I don't have have that other stuff.
Okay.
Because mine is free phone because you know my income. I wouldn't get a problem.
What it could be, you know, and this system is still in a conceptual phase, but I can just speak to, you know, the system, the alert advisor system that we developed in my past life, which when you send out a message about a bus delay, it populated, it sent that message to multiple places. It went to the website, so it posted it there. It sent it out to every customer who signed up for that bus route. So you receive that on your cell phone, on your computer, it shows it that way. It also sent it to what is called the IVR. The IVR is the Interactive Voice Response System, right? So when you called in on the customer service line, you would be read that message. So if you didn't have any of that, but you're wondering where's my bus, and you call, you can listen to those alerts. I'm not sure if that's the first stage for us. That's a bit ambitious. But that is the philosophy. We want to be able to, you know, however customers interact with us, we want to be able to give them the same information that someone with a phone has. On your first question?
Yeah. The
bus operators helping you find a seat. That falls squarely outside of my scope, but I'd be happy to find out an answer for you from Jeffrey, who has a bus company.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Do you have a question?
No, I thank you very much.
Sure.
I don't know if I was going to call you Mike Roberts. I love the new landing on the website. I remember when it first came out. I think it looks a lot smoother. I think that it puts updates right there that I don't necessarily have to go and find. But Metro Forward is different from Metro Opens Doors. And I think that when a lot of people, actually I know, the mayor of my town told me this, that when you guys launched the new Metro Forward, a lot of people took that as like, this is the new Metro web Twitter. And so they're... you respond to people on Metro Open Stores and Twitter account. Does that happen on Metro Forward?
Sure. We don't monitor Twitter based on what you put that sign in front of, for those of you who are technologically savvy. We're searching for any mention of Metro Forward, WMATA, Metro Open Stores, all of that comes up.
Right.
For us. So if you address something to Metro Forward, we're going to see it. If you address it to Open Source, we'll see it. If you address it to WMATA, whether you put a hashtag or an at sign in front of it, we're going to get all of it and respond appropriately. Your underlying comment, though, is, you know, we sort of have brand soup, if you will, in Twitter right now. We have, you know, some people use WMATA, some people use Open Source, some people use Metro Forward. I'm working on rationalizing this right now, and one of the likely is that it opens doors, which is way too long for Twitter anyway, will ride off into the sunset, and we'll use Metro Forward as our primary identity on Twitter, while still giving customers who don't want all of that detail a way to just sign up for alerts and just follow a stream that just has the automatic feed of alerts. So that's something that we will be tackling within the next 2 weeks or so.
Okay.
And we'll log about it and we'll make sure everyone knows.
And then just two real quick things that I know we have to move on.
We're going to do.
Okay. I was going to say about the emails, if
yes,
you can knock the press releases that you give them,
yes,
you get them in the email and you have to click to go to the website.
Yes.
Right? You have to click on the pattern.
Yes.
I just think that's ridiculous. If you have anything in email,
There's a reason for that, actually, and it's the way I had it set up in my past life. First of all, I don't like the way those emails come across. Metro has issued a press release entitled blah. We should have a better way to communicate what press release is about. But the reason for the link is oftentimes you have to revise press releases or get additional information and so forth. And by having it be a link and directing you to a page, we can ensure that reporters get the most accurate information whenever they get it. Sending out a second email or trying to correct or retract or revise isn't fail-safe, but directing them to a place where we have total control of content is the best way to do that. So that's the explanation I know it's not what you're looking for.
Thank
you. Yvette?
I have a Liz question. Liz coming. And it's jumping off something that Jamie had mentioned. I'm very happy with all the social media focus that you have and also the third prong of custom communications and also that you're doing things with that information. You know, it seems to me that the communications is a two-way street, and with the advent of social communications, you're going to become sort of an ombudsman. I can't say that word, ombudsman, for writers at Metro. And I'm just wondering if your office or your position is prepared for that role, and because it also seems that with Twitter, you know, customer complaints are probably the traditional customer complaints would be going down because people would be using their Twitter account to make what they consider customer complaints different if they're treated as customer complaints.
and if they're complaints, they should be, and they will be. You bring up some good points. So first, you know, we're working. We started the two-way conversation very informally, and found that people very much like it. And now we are getting some complaints that we have to address, and we want to track. We want to be able to have those be tracked in the same way that if you were to call and complain, or to use the web form and complain. So we're working with customer service, which happens to fall within the same happy family as our shop, to ensure that all this stuff gets tracked, that it's followed up on in the same way. So those links are being made right now. In terms of, you know, the role as customer advocate, which is something that we want to embrace, we're uniquely positioned. This is not unique to just this press office, this communications office, but it was the same way at NJ Transit for me. And because you're the nexus, the logical nexus of multiple departments that don't often, that sometimes don't communicate as effectively between themselves, you're in a unique position to sort of identify emerging issues or to resolve, you know, the things that customers, you know, haven't been able to get a clear answer on or just would just make sense because you're the one asking them. So I embrace that role. It's not a new one. And the folks above me are familiar with that sort of role too. You know, frankly, we're all customer advocates.
Well, I wish we could talk more. It seems like there's still a lot of questions out there, but we hope that you'll come back to visit us again. Thank you for your time, and wish you luck.
Thank you. Thank
you. Okay, and now we are running a little out of time, and I apologize to our next guest, is Mr. Dave Kubitschek, Deputy General Manager of Operations at Metro, and he's going to be speaking to us about the new revised approach to weekend track work, and he'll give a little presentation, and we'll have some time for questions.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you. Just a little bit of background before we get into the overall presentation on how we're approaching this. We really tried to, we've spent a lot of time evaluating the process of what is the most least disruptive process to fix the railroad and to keep people, most importantly, safe and on the move. There's been a lot of talk, for example, about the early closings on certain alignments. How do you logistically address that towards, you know, we shut down the red line at 10 o'clock at night, let everything else run late in time, late, you know, later times. The resources to stack that, to support that effectively. And then for us to effectively communicate to the customers, it was just, at least at this stage, it did not look to be a productive use of resources. We felt like it would really develop a lot of frustration with the customers utilizing, you know, our services across the board. So what this report here is just another part of the journey. Probably tomorrow or Friday, we should be releasing to everyone kind of like a year look ahead of all of these major outages and everything else, and then we'll be pushing it out again. And when I first got here, they used to never publish anything. Then we were able to start committing to a month. Now we're out there 2 months. You know, realistically, and then my job is realistically, I tell my staff all along, I need to be worried about what's happening 3 to 5 years out instead of the day-to-day, because if we're worrying about day-to-day, then we're really not doing a good job of planning and communicating to folks on what's taking place. So if we could, on the next slide here, this is just some brief background on the other committees and stuff. We're trying to be very transparent, very open on how we're approaching these efforts. Next slide, please. You know, again, the purpose is how do we maximize the amount of time for our trackway? We want to be as efficient as possible. The other thing is that we've shifted from an obligation-based capital structure to expenditure-based. So the days of WMATA being able to obligate and let this money sit around for years, it's not there. If we do not expend certain quantities then by the rules, then the jurisdictions could possibly lower their contribution to us. So it's kind of a two-way street. I'm used to the expenditure-based process, so my other agencies I've worked at. So on my part, it's just a matter of getting WMATA used to something new that hasn't been done in 30-plus years. And the other thing is, again, capital program schedules. Every time that we have to delay a project, we have some type of safety issue or safety event. You know, our job is to be proactive, not reactive. All right, next slide. Just to kind of, I thought this was a good presentation whenever they talked about the overall budget. You know, the 6 years and the $5 billion projects that we have, almost $3 billion is directly related to track access. So that is a huge undertaking where we have to work on this. And the other thing is this, two-track system. We're not in New York. You know, we're not in these other environments stuff where they've got multi-tracks, multi-layers. We're not in an environment they only operate 35 or 40 miles an hour. We operate one of the most aggressive profiles in North America. We run this system hard, and they hammer it every day. Next slide. Okay, this is an easy chart here. This basically what this does is I wanted to communicate all the work and stuff that's out there that's really taking place. I mean, it's basically a lot of times people just look, why are they doing this, or what's really taking place? It was important to kind of give a breakdown to the left on the different types of works, efforts, everything else, but also to kind of give you a yearly, several year look to basically let you know that this is a multi-year process. State of good repair is about constant work, constant effort. As our general manager has stated, you know, beforehand and the things that we went through, the agency got behind. So right now, not only are we in a recovery mode, but we're also looking to establish that baseline of state of good repair with the ever-increasing demand and duty cycle on our existing system. A lot of people, just kind of a trivial type fact, from a scheduling perspective, if you take all five alignments and we call the station event is where the train is approaching the station, they stop, they open doors, customers exchange, they close the doors, and they take off. All five alignments, in a one-day period, we do over 15,000 station events in one day. That's a lot of starting and stopping. That has to happen perfectly. And I listened to earlier on about communications and about impact to customers and everything else. The other thing that we're also looking at, we're monitoring our overall capacity inside the system as well. How many people do we have inside the system at a given hour during peak and stuff? We did that during the inauguration and other elsewhere. It's also very important to kind of give us an idea of how our growth and where people are actually riding it. But, you know, we might see 50,000 or 80,000 people inside the system or on a rail car all at one time. You know, that's a city. You know, we literally have a city at our fingertips, which is really remarkable.
What's the neutral host?
Pardon?
What's that down there, neutral host?
Pardon?
Second from the bottom.
Neutral host? That is for cell phone coverage. Basically, what that is doing is, you know, currently we have 20 of the largest stations that have cell phone coverage. What this neutral host is doing is that you will basically have a virtual world, I guess you could say, where you're riding the train from station to station. We should have reception on your cell phone throughout all the alignments and portals underground. So that's what neutral host is.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, what we did here was also just try to tie in, you know, what type of work ethic and stuff that are out there with all these different outages that are really needed. I mean, it's not necessarily fancy stuff, but it's stuff that we have to do to sustain the systems. We've got to take care of track. We've got to change out track fasteners. We've got to do concrete work. We've got to do proactive work. Anytime that you let the system or whatever get behind, say for it's like a ceiling, hard freezes, what it takes us maybe to fix a project for $1,000, if we don't fix an aerial structure or something underground, it could cause you tens of thousands of dollars. And that's what we're also trying to do. We're trying to get ahead of our expenditures. Letting this stuff deteriorate whenever it gets past and beyond state of good repair is more costly and it is more timely for everybody in this room that uses the system, including myself. Next slide, please. Okay, what we've done here is that this is kind of a lead-in on, you know, we talked about, you know, management, you know, type support, how we tie in resources. And it's not just the maintenance staff. We're talking about transit police, customer communications, bus operations, because anytime rail does something and we move in a certain direction, we tie up a lot of resources where people have to respond to our initiatives because, you know, it is a huge undertaking. So not only are we sensitive to the fact of what we're doing and trying to be more efficient, but also our potential impact as a whole to the agency. Then the other thing is basically make sure that we're tracking it. You know, you're starting to see a lot of the report information at the F&A committee that I sit in on, where we have real-time information on how we're doing on budgets, expenditures. You know, and that is only going to continue to increase. The final piece, again, is the solution. It's tracking. What do you do to address that? And so there's just a few items of that. Next slide. This, I just put this in this presentation. We try to do a regular Gantt chart where you just have one project after another, after another, after another. This is a stick Gantt chart. And what this does here, basically, this is like a red line. This is just a small segment of the railroad. Every one of these line segments right here tie into time. And so this right in here shows that this specific project is an emergency trip stop station, but based on its schedule, it overlaps with another project. And oh, by the way, we've got two other arrows over here that are trying to conflict. We're looking at different layers. We have, since we're 24/7, and anytime you have these conflicts and everything else, you have to have some type of dispute resolution to say, okay, is it neutral host? Is it red line contract? Are we doing elevator escalators? Are we doing power? Are we doing new signage? Are we doing tile? You know, every one of those things have to be layered on that. So this is just a snapshot for everybody to kind of get an idea. It's very complex, and this is just a small area. Next slide, please. You know, blackout dates, what we kind of look at is that, you know, these are the untouchables. Cherry Blossom Festival, 4th of July, you know, Thanksgiving weekend. You know, we also plan for certain demonstrations or schedule select events. That's probably one of the hardest things for us to work on because you never really know what event is going to pop up. You know, there's a lot of big events that take place and we adjust accordingly, but we have to make sure that we're sensitive to that. Actually, Christmas and New Year's. You know, non-revenue. Basically, you just listen, you know, the amount of time that we really have to work. It's not a lot of time to effectively go after that and work it effectively. Next slide, please. Okay, early closing of the system-wide, I talked a little bit about that. You know, I mean, it's not desired by anybody, even by us. I mean, it's just a hard issue to really to work on. Net gains for capital efforts, you know, they're really kind of nominal in a certain way. We need big volume blocks. It takes so much time for us to clean the railroad out. It takes so much time for us to set up the work, the safe working environment. It takes so much time to demobilize that area, or mobilize the area, that you have a little bit of a window. Then you got to take everything back apart, put it back together, and get out of the way. So it didn't matter if I had an 84-hour shutdown or if I had 2 or 3 hours. Our commitment to safety for our employees across the board on this railroad is paramount. And it's also about establishing the right culture, because that will make this railroad safer. It's always a dangerous environment. It's very aggressive out there. But that is something that we have to be sensitive to. And also partial line early close. Logistically, it was just whenever we started putting paper and pen together on hours. And you know, how do I communicate to somebody that we're for the next 3 months I'm shutting down the red line at 10 o'clock at night? Whenever you have all these events, you know, and especially the red line because of its impact in the core versus your outlying areas and everything else, and the transfer, the logistics. It's just really difficult, very, very difficult. Can it be done? Sure, it can be done. But at this stage, I don't think it's the right way for us because with us approaching this elsewhere, we're going to know these big blocks. You're going to know in advance. You can adjust the stuff timely. And the other thing is this, we want to do quality work. It's our tax money, and we want to make sure that we're getting a good investment and a good quality product so we don't have to go back there and touch that stuff for several years. Next slide, please. Okay, this is just one example. What this really represents in short, if I follow the traditional WMATA way, just the red line alone, just to do the modules, not all the certifications and everything else, we would be calendar year 2013, we would probably be 2014 before we would see any ATO operation on the red line. Just the red line. The yellow, blue, green, orange, you're looking at probably 2020. Okay? Now, we look at a little bit more aggressive shutdowns. You know, we cut a lot of time. But this is the one that we're going after. This is the aggressive one. We expect calendar year, first quarter, towards the end of 2012, I'll have every one of those train control modules done. The red line is a line that we will prioritize to get back to ATO as soon as possible. Now, we'll have to do certification. There's other NTSB recommendations and everything else. But if you look at the time difference between that, the money that we waste, everything else, I think it's worth the effort, worth the time frame, you know, across the board, because as we all know, when the trains are operating in ATO and the system is functional, our on-time performance on average improves about 3 to 5%. And that's really good. Automatic train operation. Automatic train operation is basically where the system itself is moving all the trains and stuff and monitoring what's taking place. Right now, you notice we have a lot, sometimes, especially the newer operators, we'll go into a station and you'll have a lot of rocking and swaying and then the repositioning and stuff. That's a manual operation. When it's automatic train operation, the system is monitoring everything and knows where every train is at, and it moves at a much aggressive profile as well. Okay, next slide, please. Planning going forward, again, you know, we're just looking at productivity of work crews. The other thing is this. When we plan this work, we plan all these outages, the same staff is what we have. We've got to make sure we don't fatigue our workers out as well. They've got to be fresh. We've got to make sure that they have a good environment to work in, because we have got years and years of work in front of us. Okay, next slide. Okay, holiday weekends, this is basically guarded number 8. These are NTSB recommendations. Before I got here, this agency was behind on a lot of recommendations. We were not in good standing. and it was not a very pleasant environment to transition. I can tell you now, we're not perfect, but we're in much better standing, and this schedule that's up here represents, we have an approval or approved acceptable status, which is very, very important for this agency. So that way basically shows that we're responsive, we're doing the work the right way. These are areas that we know that are taking place. We did this schedule 2 years ago. We're at 100% on this. For example, when we did Eastern Market and everything else, and we got a lot of grief and stuff, we are putting this out there. That was out there last year. And, you know, this is the schedule that we've got to hold. So that means that guarded number eights, next year, next Memorial Day, this time, you know, next year, we will be done with guarded number eights. We will be able to look at everybody.
What does guarded number eight mean?
What guarded number eights is a safer rail switch. Basically, it protects the rail car to make sure that it keeps it on board and prevents derailments. And we have over 170.
You can't stay from the car on top of it.
Well, what it does is, no, it basically what it does is when trains are moving from one track to the next, you're bending all this steel and everything is having to run. And a lot of times when you put steel on steel, you hear it grind and it kind of, you know, it pop, it's popping and creaking and stuff. Well, what happens is whenever those trains are moving, a lot of times I have a tendency of riding, we call it riding up, where it gets so much force is applied that literally it'll raise the wheels up and it'll try to come off. What this guarded rail does is it puts another set of rails behind it, and it basically locks it to the track when it's going through this interlocking, and it keeps it down.
Can you talk, I mean, I guess that means that on those holidays when you will be working at those stations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, I published this last year, and we've been hitting it every mark. We bought parts, materials 2 years ago, setting this stuff up, because that's the other thing. We're doing just-in-time delivery. We don't want a lot of material stuff that's laying around here that one that gets lost. It's costing us inventory and stuff. We want to spend our money wisely, and I think that that's the right way for us to address a production environment. Next slide. Okay, ongoing work. Again, it's kind of just a recap of what y'all have seen. It's focused on NTSB recommendations, capital adjustments, capital investment, the Dulles extension out there. You're going to see a lot of outages and stuff on the orange line between West Falls Church and East Falls Church. For example, there's 2 days in July, the 16th and I think the 23rd. We saw those weekends. That's whenever we're going to actually start doing the tie-in work, where you're going to see track work where the system is getting ready to start tying in with our existing orange line. You know, that was planned a year ago, a year and a half. We've got to keep the schedules to keep the line going. Next slide. Okay, basically what we've done here is just also to just give a construction event, just a very high level setup of the number of them and the quantity. I really think that whenever tomorrow afternoon or probably on Friday, you'll get a snapshot for those that look at our website and stuff of all the track outages. You're going to see some very detailed information all the way until next year of all the outages on all the alignments. We're making it very simple, basically text-driven, so you'll kind of understand what station, where things are at, and it won't be the last time that we communicate this, and that's the other thing. It is an ongoing process. It's a commitment to keeping everybody in the loop, and it's also a good way of holding ourselves accountable to make sure that we are fulfilling those things. Not that we'll always be 100% perfect, but, you know, we want to be able to say that whenever we go into this, when we leave that railroad from that weekend, we're making it a better railroad. And that's one of my biggest questions. How safe were we? And are we making it a better railroad every time we leave from that work site for our customers? Next slide, please. Customer notification, part of what, you know, Dan is working on and the rest of the team. We're using e-alerts, Twitter, you know, they're gonna get a lot larger. And I see a radio contingency where that's gonna pick up. All of the newspaper stuff, they're looking at what's posted in some of the newspapers to bring it up, to bring it to folks' attention. We're going to be looking at stuff on areas that are blocked and stuff that we control. It's just important. And then the other thing is reaching out to community groups, government stakeholders, everybody, because we're impacting a lot of people. Next slide. I think this is it. Okay. And then the other thing that we'll take advantage of, again, is, you know, just what we can do internally. These two pages, is just putting it in there and working it down so that way we can get out as much information as possible to take advantage of all the vendors. And I think that's it. Okay. Any questions?
Okay, now, any questions? We won't go around.
Dave, do you have, can you send this out electronically? Can you share that electronically?
Yeah, this actually was
at the PowerPoint presentation.
Yes, sir. This was actually from one of our committees, but we can go ahead and resend it.
That would be great. There's a lot of.
I can send it to you.
Yeah, good. Okay. Thanks, John. There's a lot of good data in here I'd like to share with the AEC.
Sure. And like I said, if I really can't stress it enough, our next report that we're going to be sending out that's going out about a year or so over the next couple of days, I think will be a good addition to this. It'll overlay, just continues to tell the story.
Okay, I have Joseph, David, Diana, and Sharon.
I want to thank you for your presentation, and I think it's very detailed. I guess the concern that I have, I guess the point that we need to do this construction, it's for safe beauty and things like that. Some of the holidays that you've identified here, they are holidays, but they're also very workable holidays. Like, a lot of people work on those days, and so to take their metro station out and add, you guys say 30 minutes, that's ridiculous. That adds almost an hour to people's commute. It really sets them back. And so I don't know if you guys have actually tried to experience that and what it does to those communities. I think you should. And if you haven't, I think you should. The other question that I have for you, the more realistic question that I have for you, is when you talk about pushing this information out, because I know that you guys do a very good job of it, but I think that if you talk about pushing this information out, if you can push it out more to the local municipalities, by Mayor and Cheverly, the Alpha Metro Station in Cheverly, he's never talked to Metro. And so when there's a problem at Metro, he normally hears about it, because people complain to him because he was the mayor and they expect him to fix it. And so if you guys can push information out to them and meet with them and help them be able to field these questions, I think would be very beneficial to them. If you guys haven't done that, I don't know that you haven't, but if you haven't done that, that probably would be a better way than just the media that you guys are doing very good at doing.
Okay, sure. I'll check with our government relations folks and ask them how they mail that out to their respective level. And also, you know, around the holidays, we really looked at this very hard. I be honest with you, we don't like working the holidays because that means all of our staff is working. And I work every holiday as well. The one thing that we are all very sensitive to is that whenever it's a weekday, full Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, that's the last thing that I really want to touch, you know, on that. And so that's why the holidays and stuff, you know, come into play. And hopefully whenever we complete some of this work, you know, going forward, then that means that, you know, there might be other work behind it that's coming out, but we're going to know, you know, well in advance. But we'll continue to review it, but I must be honest with you, I'm going to be looking at these holidays because it's about 84 hours of continuous work time where the ridership is lighter, and that really gives us an opportune time that minimizes our impact to the global folks. Okay?
So the bottom line for customers is that you're going to be doing single traffic on weeknights and then long weekend outages of a segment of the system like you have been. Is that right?
One of the things that we'll see that will take place is whenever we have accelerated major outages, we only have so many resources, so we're going to see, you know, we're going to see some reductions in some of the single traffic. Because whenever we shut down a railroad, both tracks, we only have so many people. So they can't be working the same five or six, you know, locations. And so what we're trying to do is look at this to be sensitive to make sure that the bus service mirrors the rail service as close as possible for the transfers. So that way, and then the other thing is to make sure that the rest of the alignment runs a normal schedule. So in that way, you know, if you're over on the Fort Totten area or Silver Springs and you're coming into the downtown area, your trip might not be impacted like it would be if we do a long single track over on the other side of the red line and everything else. So we're trying to create zones where the system operates smoothly.
Okay. You're talking about the ATO operation. So my understanding is, not knowing all the technical details, that that was shut down because there were, the signaling system was prone to having some failures where the it would lose the indication
train
where
detection.
The train detection.
Yes.
You have the, so you're going through and replacing the
all the modules.
The modules. These are the modules.
Everything.
And when those get replaced, it's a system that everyone is comfortable that the train detection does not then fail. Is that right?
Yes. The system that we'll be putting in is totally different from a standpoint of technology than what we have in this railroad right now. We will check wiring. We will check the overall configuration and design. You'll heard where we have like a device that monitors, it's called a loss of shunt tool, that's secondary. We will continue to do that process. That process now is basically a overlay or a redundant type approach to monitor this train control. And once we get that done, working with the NTSB, answering any of their questions or concerns, and working with the safety departments to answer their concerns, then that's where we'll go back, I guess. We are not putting the same technology platform back in this railroad. It is totally different. Diane?
Hi. I live on the east end of Capitol Hill in Ward 6, and I feel like, I imagine you've heard about this before, but I do have to say that there was a lot of discontent with the Memorial Day weekend closure along the Cap Hill segment of the Orange and Blue Line. That was Rolling Thunder weekend. There is a concert every year on Capitol Hill. The Business Improvement District had also planned a big Eastern Market Barracks Row kickoff, and the fact that, you know, our new DC board member Tommy Wells is that is his not just his ward but his home territory really had a lot of people very wound up. And I appreciate that you have a need for extended periods of time when you can shut down the entire system. And you know, we have this long-standing perception that this system is about getting 9-to-5 workers in and out of downtown. And that's what the system is about. And I cannot imagine a situation that was really more contra to that myth than closing down that segment of the Orange and Blue Line over Memorial Day. You know, it just for the culture of that part of town, it was so disruptive and demoralizing. I don't know how else to put it into words, but I think it's another example of how getting outside the building and coordinating more with the people in the communities and getting more of an understanding of what's important to people. I can tell you, in and around Easter, I think you probably could close down that segment of the Orange and Blue Line in the middle of the week. It's a ghost town on Capitol Hill. You know, I mean, it's just, I think that there are opportunities to, like, shut down on Mondays and Fridays that aren't holiday weekends sometimes. And maybe say, especially, this is the capital of the United States. People come here over holidays from other parts of the country, and part of the whole tourism marketing of this area is that you can get a hotel out where it's cheaper and take the subway into town. When you do stuff like this, you're ruining people's holidays, you know, then they get congressionals, then everyone's wound up, and it just makes everybody look bad. So I'm sorry, I'll stop talking now because I feel like I'm going off, and I know you've heard about this before, but for the sake of my people, I had to bring it up again, so thanks.
No problem. And again, I can tell you that our plans were laid out and communicated well in advance of them establishing their event. We did speak with them. We did work with them early on to try to get an estimate of how many people were going to show up, what the District of Columbia was doing for their side of the effort. You know, for example, one of the things that, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, I asked him, I said, how many people that ride motorcycles, that ride to D.C., are going to get off their motorcycles, park it, and ride our rail system to get to an event?
And we asked a lot of pointy questions to try to get an idea of what's taking place on that. I know it upset the community members and everything else, but the other thing that it was this. I have parts and materials that are custom fit, that are custom made, that were ordered in advance. I'm providing a safer railroad for those people that are operating and riding on that around the clock. And if I continue to get people excited at me, which it will happen, but I know that I'm making it a safer railroad for you, myself, my family that rides this, I will gladly continue to take the heat because it's about a safe environment.
Sharon?
Okay, this is very quickly, and thank you for your presentation. The NTSB recommendations, have you listed all of their recommendations, because that's what's in the paper, that the recommendations that they've made over a number of years. Mm-hmm. And my first question is whether or not all of their recommendations are included in this report, or are there many others?
Every recommendation that this agency has open, well before my time and now, is being addressed. There is not one single effort that the recommendations out there that we're not communicating them on.
And my other question is, do you foresee a fare increase because of the improvements that you have to make?
I'm not the right person to ask on that one there.
Well, within your budget, are these recommendations within?
Well, for example, like the rail cars, you know, like the recommendation replacing the 1000s and everything else, that's already funded. The train control modules and stuff, we've already met before the board for all of that. That's already funded. So a lot of our stuff that we're looking at, that equated was, you know, well over $1 billion. You know what we're investing in stuff. That's part of this capital project and what we're undertaking at this time.
Is there anything that has not been funded?
The only thing that I could see that could pop up, and we'll wait to see, is once we address the NTSB recommendations and we work with them. They're going to go back through their review, and if they come back with some recommendation that we have not been able to forecast or look into, you know, some type of understanding and rationale. But if you go through the report, you know, the NTSB website, and you see all their little recommendations, acronyms and stuff, we have a documented response or process that's underway on every one of those, just like what we're doing with safety or the FTA. It's a big proponent of that. Every one of these items, it might not be moving as fast as what people want it, but it makes the list, and we're aware of it, and it's our job to implement and address those issues.
Thank you. Yeah. We're really sort of running out of time, so I have three people who haven't asked questions yet. Carol, Stephen, and Kelsey. And then I think we'll have it.
I have one comment. I feel for you because you have a very difficult job. I think safety first. I can appreciate the comments. The comment I have is I think the 1 month idea is a bad one. I think you need to have a communications plan well communicated at least 3 months before the event. I think running it up to the 1 month is running too close to the mark.
You're going to see the expanded view. I think whenever we release this detailed review for the year, then it'll be going out even farther.
But I'm talking about a specific campaign that before every event need to be, people need to sort of get the word, like these movies that come out and you see coming to your theater July 29th and, you know, you hear about it and it gets closer and closer. I'm saying you really need to do something like that to really pierce the consciousness of people, not all of whom are on Twitter and,
yeah,
you know. Okay.
I totally agree.
Quick question. I see in this presentation is a $5 billion capital improvement layout, but it is based on an annual appropriation from Congress every year, mm-hmm. $500 million. Given what the House Appropriations Committee is proposing for transportation, which is big cuts in rail programs and road programs throughout the country, is there a contingency plan if all this money is ultimately not delivered to Metro, or if the plug is pulled much quicker after the 2012 elections?
Yes, we have looked at this, as y'all are aware, our general managers up on Capitol Hill quite a bit. We got huge government relations, you know, contingency, as well, you know, as our federal board members and, you know, all our members across. We're very, very concerned about this. I mean, realistically, if we have to stop some of these initiatives that are up there, we will take a, you know, a bare bones approach. I mean, for example, it's pretty straightforward. We know that the rail cars are going to be replaced, and we got to change out the guarded number 8 switches, and we got to address, you know, the train control model. So there could be other improvements, you know, custom system improvements and stuff, you know, like air conditioning in stations or elevator escalator work, which is a lightning rod here as well. You know, those things we've looked at because they're very, very critical for the over network. But we, I'll be honest with you, you know, our job is to line these projects up and make sure that we deliver and perform. And whenever y'all see the numbers and stuff, we're probably pretty close. This is my first year of really being involved in the capital here and taking charge of it. But when the numbers and stuff come out, we could be $150 to $200 million more expended this year than if you look at the previous year. And I take that I'm very proud of that. And I think that'll get the people's attention that we're making that. Also, from an obligation base, we obligated close to 90% of all of our money, which means it's already working and it's planned out. And you give me another year of working that with my staff and everything else, we'll make a really good case. Because the other thing that I've also communicated, like these multi-year projects, you cut the funding, but then we have to pay penalties to all these contractors that have got these long lead items. So it's going to not only is it costing us on the front end to do the work, but then if they cut the money or whatever, then it's going to cost this agency to kill contracts. And that's another thing that we're bringing up a lot of people overlook.
Kelsey?
Thanks for your presentation. I'm looking at the slide on page 17 titled Key Projects Requiring Track Access. And I noticed that it's a bar chart. And I noticed that the yellow and green line, there is, I guess, no access needed until July 2016. Can you tell me why? Is that because these are newer lines, they're in better condition?
Yes and yes. Where I would say the one thing where the yellow green line will probably populate is whenever we get finished with the red line on the train control modules, and we can have an idea, you'll probably see some work and stuff that will populate in that. But we're using the red line to really get a good baseline on what it's going to take to work it. The green, yellow green, it'll eventually come there. It gets old. It has a lot of folks on it as well.
Well, Mr. Kubitschek, your True Works 24/7 will be open on YouTube. So I just want to thank you for your time and your information, and we appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you all very much for having me. Sorry I went a little bit long, but I don't get an opportunity like this, and it's good to spread the message to all folks. So we really appreciate y'all supporting all the good things y'all are doing for us as well.
Okay, since we are a little behind, I'm going to suggest that we postpone the 7,000 series mock-up recap review until next month, and that if there's any pressing or burning thing on your mind, that you send that over to email, and we'll maybe jot it down with me so that you remember it for next month. I think that will take us a long time. Upcoming meetings, bus committee, John.
Still working on a date.
Okay.
So.
All right. Check your emails for that. Okay. Questions and comments on the RAC chair and the AAC chair reports. I sent mine out by email. Pat,
you can find it. Yeah, mine was a little bit tonight.
Oh, okay.
I have one question. Pat, this is Carol Walker. The rails, the red rails, when they get cracked and broken, is that an issue for the AAC? You know, on the metro rails, when I was at the Silver Spring station and I stepped out and they were like crumbling tiles, which to me would be quite dangerous for someone with any kind of
mobility impairment.
Yeah.
Right, yes. No, that's something that we're looking at also. I think one of the things that, as you'll see in the report that I have, is we have a bus rail subcommittee that's reporting recommendations to the full committee. We certainly would like to be able to interface very closely with what's going on with this committee. So when we have recommendations, that is consistent and we're both saying the same thing. A lot of what is said here interfaces very nicely with positions that we take. And I think if we can speak with one voice,
it's going to be pretty popular.
Right.
By the way, Joseph Kitchen asked over email if we could have an update on the bylaws issue. So I asked John to present us with copies of the bylaws and procedures.
Yes. Boards.
The racks. I'm sorry, the boards.
The boards.
Rack suggestions to the board. And the bylaws suggestions are the bylaws, the section of the bylaws germane to the RAC is on page 15, and the section of the procedures germane to the RAC is on page 7 of the procedures. Okay. So that those, and you know, the comments are there. And some of the changes that took place.
These are our comments.
These are comments. What's included are comments from all sorts of stakeholders. So there are comments from the RAC. There are comments from, I believe, the Board of Trade. I don't have a copy in front of me. I'm sorry. Comments from. No, I'm good. Thanks, Matt. Comments from representatives of the governors and mayor, that group that was reviewing Metro Governance. It's sort of all of the comments. In terms of schedule, they were supposed to consider those at about a month ago, and those meetings ran long, so they sort of punted, and will be the board's governance committee will be sort of doing a final consideration tomorrow morning. So I'll be able to give you an update on what's in and what's out as of tomorrow afternoon.
But what it looks like is, from the comments, is that, you can tell me if I'm getting this wrong, but it looks like from the comments is that they have accepted, or they're recommending that they accept what we wrote. Is that true?
Yes.
Dave, do you want this chair to say anything about?
Sure. Well, on page 15, and really 16, there were two things we noticed that somehow part of our mission statement, on page 15 at the bottom, this paragraph B, Writers Advisory Council, is basically our mission statement repeated, the same mission statement that's in our bylaws. But somehow one item, promote remodel responsiveness to riders, had gotten deleted. So we noticed that and said, hey, it got deleted. Right. On page 16, this paragraph comes from our discussion last month about the bylaws making mention of the board's expectation that staff would provide information to the RAC for presentations or other information as appropriate to fulfill our mission, and that we make requests through the chair as a body. Other than that, there's not very much in the bylaws that talk about the RAC, because we have our own bylaws, which the board has approved. So it just needs to go into a huge amount of detail. If you look at the comment on the right, on page 16, that is what we suggested last time that they put in here. Then the general counsel took that and changed it slightly. The main thing that they changed was that they added, at the end, it says they'll provide the information unless it would impose an undue burden or the information involves a matter which would be considered by the board in an executive session. So, you know, we can't say we like the, you know, status of the negotiations over the GM's pay or something, you know, because that's it. And then that's what we suggested, and then they added, or the information, or otherwise be exempt from disclosure under the public access to records policy, or PARP. So PARP has certain rules about, PARP is the policy that people in the public can request information from Metro, under the policy generally, they have to go through this sort of legal procedure to get the information. We wouldn't have to go through that, but it basically says there are certain class categories of information that aren't released under PAR. And those categories of information largely parallel the same kinds of things that get covered in the executive session, and are generally also things that aren't the kind of information we would be asking for.
And are being passed around now. The items that are exempt from disclosure under PAR. This is the handout that you get. So
I hope that's clear. What page was our thing on the procedures? So there's very little in the procedures, simply that anything we ask for information goes to the board secretary, and that they have to notify both the board chair and the RAF chair if a request is not fulfilled. We had asked, in addition, that perhaps there be a procedure explicitly saying. We had a few other things. One was that the staff would prepare a written documentation explaining why they're not providing us with any information promptly. And then secondly, we sort of asked the board if they might include a procedure specifying what way they review these things. So let's say we asked for something, then the staff said no, and the board secretary tells the RAF chair, which would be through John, who would tell the RAF chair, and the board secretary would tell the board chair, oh, the RAF wanted a presentation on the maintenance schedule, and the staff said, no, we don't want to do it. Or we wanted to get them to send us the maintenance schedule, and they said that we don't want to do it, or something like that. We had suggested that the board sort of set a procedure for what they do after that. Like, does Frank bring it up at their monthly meeting? Or, you know, does it go to some committee? Like, if the governance committee always the one that would take a look at this issue, you know, sort of who do we reach out to on the board? And what procedure do they follow to deal with that issue? Now, they didn't put that in. It could be that that's not a problem. And if there is a denial, which we don't know, you know, how often that will happen, but if there is, then, you know, we ask some members on the board, like, what do you want to do, and ask them to review it. On the other hand, it might create some ambiguity where they would be like, well, we don't know if we're supposed to review it or something like that. So that was a concern that we, that's a sort of one concern. So you guys, I guess, overall, got to see the exemption to disclosure. These things largely are the same, I think, or pretty similar to the ones that are the executive session criteria.
Are these executive session criteria in the file last time?
They may be. I don't have a copy in front of me.
Page 9 of the earlier packet. Matters appropriate for the session. This list here. These matters for executive session. So, you know, I haven't gone through exactly, but there may be things that are listed here on the part. Section 6, which are not in Article 10 or vice versa.
Questions or comments? Chris?
If I could move something, I would move